So, seeing as how we are rolling up the sleeves and looking at the big problems this morning, let us stick with that and make it our theme of the morning and look at the D word, derogation. Back in the early 90s, all across the EU, a rule was introduced to protect rivers and streams from agricultural runoff. Very roughly speaking, and I'm doing a lot of rounding up and rounding down here, it meant that farms could only have between 1.5 and 2 cows per hectare. Ireland was first out of the traps in 2006, followed by 4 other countries, in asking for a dispensation from this rule. What if you were to allow us 3 cows per hectare and we promise in exchange to operate to a much higher standard of environmental protection? OK, said Brussels, we'd give it a go. And at the last count, 7,000 out of 137,000 farms in Ireland had received a derogation from the Nitrates Directive. Now, many of those farms took out big mortgages to pay for the increased volume of slurry storage that they would need because they now had more animals. They made a lot more money, but they were also carrying a lot more long-term debt. There were many winners right the way throughout the rural economy from this. But fast forward almost 20 years to today, and many of our rivers are reaching the point where scientists tell us before long, life will not be viable in those rivers. We have all contributed to that. Misconnected sewers, badly maintained treatment plants, much more heavy industry. But the analysis by the scientists shows that farming is by far the biggest part of the problem on the rivers that are most at risk. Now, one remedy to this that Brussels is looking at is to change or to take away that derogation, take it away from those 7,000 farmers, which would require them to reduce the size of their herds. For father and son partnership, Owen and Joe Lenehan, farming just outside Duleek, County Meath, that would be nothing short of disastrous.
How long are you farming here?
All my life since I left school in 77. Third generation now.
More? It's definitely 4 or 5 because your father was born here.
Yeah.
So, and the other generation before that as well.
Farmed here, yeah.
So your grandfather then would have to have been farming.
Fifth generation.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I can help you work this out. When did you go into derogation then?
Dad was milking until 2015 and he gave it up then. Due to health reasons and other things. And then I went back there in 2021, then went into derogation in 2023.
You're still very obviously farming. You haven't retired since
2015. Semi-retired.
So you wouldn't have been able to keep running this place without finding a way to bring his nibs here
yes,
in?
Yes, correct. I'm right. That's 100% right.
Okay. And you couldn't have brought his nibs in here and him taking a full salary out of the place at the stocking density that you had?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. We had to increase the stocking density.
Would it have been possible for the two of you to work side by side in partnership without going into derogation?
No, absolutely not. The numbers just wouldn't have added up. We wouldn't have had the milk sales to be able to support 2 incomes. So when we went back there, and it gave Dad a new lease of life as well, because I was here with him instead of him being on his own. Now that there's 2 of us are here, he's in a lot better farm, and a lot of people have said that to me. Locally, that.
Are you? Are you in a lot better form, are you?
I must be needing him as much. When he wasn't here, I had all the pressure and all the worry of everything going on. Now I don't. You or somebody else can come into the yard. Do you want to talk to me or him? And I'd say, you talk to Owen,
okay,
not me.
Okay.
All the bills are left on my desk.
Everything goes to his desk.
He doesn't worry about that.
I don't have to worry about anything.
A problem shared is a problem halved,
yes,
kind of thing.
Yes.
Morning, Ireland. 8:12. The European Commissioner for the Environment is in County Kildare today visiting a farm ahead of a decision which farmers and the government say could be devastating for agriculture here. The Nitrates Directive is an...
Environment officials from the European Commission have been visiting Ireland a lot in recent months. On one trip, they went to see Owen and Joe's farm.
And he said it's the first time he's been on farm in 20 years. And I found that very hard to understand that. How can a lad who's not out on farm looking at things tell me on paper what I can and can't do? That's frustrating part.
Okay.
Now, he was very open and he took in a lot when he was here.
One of the things that the Lenehans showed the officials was the small stream that runs between their land and their neighbour. Owen and Joe's fence is set back several metres from the river because they are in derogation. But the neighbour's fence and cattle are within inches of the same stream because his is not a derogation farm. It's frustrating to Owen and Joe that in order to improve water quality, the Commission is not getting every other farm to up its game, but is looking instead at removing their derogation.
They were kind of baffled a bit by the rules, maybe. I don't know what to think.
They're their rules.
They're their rules. Well, it's the Department of Agriculture set the rules in place. Now, I did explain that eventually everyone will be fenced out like this, but they went quiet on them rules.
It must have seemed like a little bit of a head-scratcher to them that you have to do what you do, but yet on the other side of that stream there's somebody else who is completely compliant with the rules, whose livestock is right up against the edge of the water.
Yeah, that's right. And he was baffled. He was baffled when he saw it. Definitely was baffled. Couldn't understand it. And it's their rules.
So if you remove the derogation, well, there'd be nothing to stop you from reclaiming that little bit of land if you were bothered to.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily improve the quality of anything in the water, does it?
No.
Contemplate a world in which the derogation goes on the 1st of January.
Well, I'd be looking for a full-time job in the middle of calving season, which is not, it's not ideal.
Definitely not ideal, no. Because I don't want to go back working the hours I used to work. I wouldn't be fit to do it. It's as simple as that at my age. And I'm only 67.
So what does that mean then? Does it mean that this farm goes on the market?
It's not going on the market, that's for certain. No, anyway, but like when I finished college, the plan was to go to get an office job. And I just said, no, I can't do that. And work part-time and work all day and night and weekend just to keep the place going. But
I can see that you're neither of you really fully contemplating what the consequences of this are because you don't want to.
No,
exactly. No.
It's just too grim.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Heather and furs or whins, as they're called in Longford, our nature is great for filling the gap left by humans. When humans get out of the way, Nature colonizes, recolonizes very quickly, and that's what's happening.
With 100 cows, Owen and Joe would only be slightly above average-sized irrigation farmers. In Longford, with 340 cows, Mike McGann would be very much a larger derogation farmer.
There's nothing been done. The boundary drains are deep.
It has been good to him too, allowing him to also work in partnership with his son. But Mike accepts that dairy expansion has not been good for water quality.
I think we've got here because most of the farms that are in derogation tended to be ones that have followed the science, tended to be ones that had a particular farm size that they wanted to concentrate stocking rate, or they wanted to follow higher nitrogen use to get more output from the farms. So from that point of view, yeah, there's something similar about all the farms that are in derogation.
Labels aren't helpful, but there does seem to be in the public imagination an equation between big farms and derogation farms. Is that inaccurate?
I think it's partly true, but like everything else, the answers are complex. It's reasonably accurate, but there are a lot of farms that would be called moderate size that are in derogation because they've driven output from their farms. They've driven stocking rates. They've followed the advice. They've followed the science. So they've increased stocking rate. They've put nitrogen use to what was then an acceptable limit. Now it's not acceptable and they have to change. And that's the challenge, changing from where they were, which was following the science and best practice, to now where they need to be to ensure that we follow the science in protecting waterways to have them sufficiently clean.
Explain what chasing numbers means in the context of farming.
People with good dry farms can push production up to 16, 17 tonnes of grass dry matter per hectare.
What does that mean now?
It means that they can grow sufficient grass on their land to feed 3 cows on a hectare, if they're allowed to put out over 200 kilograms of nitrogen. So effectively, they're sweating their resource, maximising the amount of production you can get per hectares by putting the maximum number of animals that can be carried, or the optimum number of animals that that farm can carry, is the way you make more money. And that's the system that we've been encouraged to follow.
But I detect in some farms a reluctance to step back, a feeling that that's the opposite of progress. I made it to X number of cows. To come back from that would be to admit defeat.
Yeah, I suppose we could do the King Canute and try to keep back the tide of the regulatory tide. But I don't think it'll serve us well. I think we do have to look at, the science is telling us that those very high stocking rates could lead to problems.
Explain that human impulse to me, though, that reluctance to step back.
It's in all of us, Philip. Like we're all driven by achieving. It's a little bit like asking a football team to try less hard the next time they go out, or to tell a shopkeeper, look, I want you to sell a little bit less tomorrow. We're all driven by an ambition. And I think maybe that's a title you could put to some derogation farms. They've been ambitious and they've pushed their business. And it's very hard. Human nature is it stops us from pulling back from high achievement. And a lot of these guys have been high achievers, and they don't want to maybe pull back and achieve a little bit less.
That is to say that the measure of success is herd size, when there's so many farms that I have been on that have pulled back a little bit and have said to me, do you know what, we're just as profitable at 10 or 12% less than we were when we had two cows to every blade of grass. Is that a message that's understood, that is going beyond those farms?
I think it's a message we need to push harder. I think it's a message. It's a good message, because there are many farms that have been driven by numbers, and maybe performance per cow has suffered. And if having 10% less cows can have the same number of total output, well, then that's better all around. It's better for the farmers economically, apart from environmentally. So I think these things are linked. If we can link the economics and the environment story, I think that message could get across in a stronger way.
But that is not where the public debate about the derogation is at. And many derogation farmers feel that they are being unfairly pilloried, particularly by the media. Back in Duleek, Owen and Joe were both very angry with me about a recent radio interview I had done on the derogation.
We need to clear the air. You didn't like the interview I did with the IFA president.
No, I was listening to it. I didn't hear the start of it, in fairness, but I thought you asked leading questions, and I just wasn't happy after it. I was getting madder and madder listening to it.
What in particular?
It's okay for the likes of me or you that have knowledge about derogation and why we need it, but I think for the regular Joe Soap listener, like what you were saying about what Francie Gorman said, that we're the fourth best water quality in Europe, and you turn around and says, no, would you not take it as the fourth least worst? Like, that's glass half empty kind of approach. I'd be more positive. I just thought it was leading the average listener to think that the farmers are just bad in general.
And I think, Philip, to be fair, I take issue with that point that you've made. We have the fourth best groundwater quality in Europe. I think the latest EPA report, and there was a good bit of focus on that, shows that the nitrate loading has reduced across the country by 25%.
It has, Francie, but we have to put that fact. Francie, for the listeners who don't understand this, we have to put that fact in its proper context. We might be the fourth best in Europe, but everybody in Europe is failing to meet the water quality directives.
That may be the case. We have the fourth best groundwater quality in Europe, and we're the only country in Europe that has a derogation.
So fourth and least worst would be the fourth least worst would be better way to describe it, wouldn't it?
Well, Philip, you know, I get up in the morning with the glass half full, not half empty.
What he said would be like me saying I'm the fourth fastest sprinter among RTE journalists. I might be, but it doesn't make me fast.
No, but what are you benchmarking against?
Everybody else, that just because we're cleaner than everybody else doesn't make us clean.
No, not clean, but cleaner is better than dirtier. Yeah,
but where everybody is failing, the standard was the point that I was making to him.
But that's, if everyone else is failing and they don't have derogation, does that not prove to you that the derogation doesn't have much of an impact on water quality.
I get it. From your point of view, it must just sound like yet another person in Dublin media who has no skin in the game talking about my livelihood and doing it in a kind of an offhand and a flippant way.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, yeah. Our livelihood's at stake here, and it's make or break, kind of. It's always negative. You never hear good news stories in farming.
Countrywide, you hear a few good news
Countrywide
stories.
Is okay, but that was on a Clare Bourne interview, you don't know, so.
Yeah, we listen to Countrywide a lot, yeah.
Did you hear that interview?
I did hear an interview. I rang him, tell him to turn on the radio quick.
And you were fuming as well,
I was fuming, yes, okay. Definitely. I just thought we weren't giving Francie a chance to answer and explain in detail what he needed to explain.
Yeah, anyway. And it's grand for the likes of you and your team. You have a team of researchers there. Like, you're interviewing us here. There's no paper in front of us. I didn't write down anything that I needed to say. It's just all flowing. So, like, it's easy when you have a team behind you to put questions to someone and catch them off guard sometimes.
Well, it's his job to know all of that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's so many figures. I don't know how anyone would remember.
Okay. Well, you see, my big part of that conversation was that because Ireland has played chicken with the Commission and said, no, we're not going to budge on our attitude to the derogation, we're now looking at what could be a cliff edge on January the 1st. Mm. That's not good for you guys.
No, it's not good for us. And obviously, if it does go, which I hope it doesn't, there's going to have to be a cooling off period of a couple of years minimum, because you can't just go from 220 to 170 on the 1st of January. Like, that's just not going to work.
Incidentally, do we have the fourth cleanest water in Europe?
I hear that statistic a lot, and what I'd say to that is all of Europe is actually failing to comply with the Water Framework Directive. Like, water quality throughout Europe is bad. So I don't think it's really valuable to say we're not failing as bad as somebody else. We're all still failing. It doesn't really...
It's a not comparison good, is not a useful measurement.
Yeah, it's not a useful barometer of whether we're doing well or not. We're failing.
Dr. Elaine McGough is a PhD in freshwater ecology. She's also head of advocacy with Antashka. She argues it is no wonder that our water quality is not improving, because derogation farmers are being told to do things that will not stop nitrates getting into the water.
This is an incredibly difficult situation. I mean, derogation farmers find themselves in an impossible situation. They're after expanding in line with government advice. They've invested money. Their livelihoods depend on the derogation. But the issue is that the derogation is granted on the condition that we have good water quality. And the fact remains that we just don't have good water quality. So they've been advised to do this against scientific advice, I would say.
And the measures that have been introduced or implemented by farmers on derogation farms, over and above what everybody else is doing, are they having any beneficial impact?
I think there's a really critical thing that people need to understand, and there's a very much a knowledge deficit here. So I want to just clarify this. When people talk about water quality, they think of it as one distinct problem. But agricultural water pollution comes with very different faces. You can have nitrogen pollution, phosphorus pollution, and silt pollution. They're the main ones. But what people need to understand is, and to oversimplify it somewhat, if you have free draining soil, like in the south and southeast of Ireland, where a lot of our dairy farms are, nitrogen is a massive problem. And it's moving right down through the soil. It runs down through the soil quite quickly. Then in the west coast of Ireland, you have heavy soils, and that's where phosphorus and silt is more of a problem. And that's where people will be familiar with seeing like muddy streams running over the land and into rivers and lakes. That's where you'll have phosphorus and silt being a problem. But when it comes to the solutions, we have a one size fits all. So you'll have farmers putting in place buffer zones and fencing off rivers and using low emission slurry spreading. But if you think about it, if nitrogen pollution is going straight down through the soil, what's a buffer zone going to do for that? The nitrogen doesn't go near the buffer zone. The nitrogen is long gone. You know, the buffer zone would help intercept the overland flow pathway from phosphorus and silt. So it's fine, it works on some farms. But if you have a farm on free draining soil that has a nitrogen pollution problem, and you're fencing off river courses and you're putting buffer zones in place, you're, to a certain extent, you're wasting your time if you think you're addressing nitrogen pollution.
We're setting a mousetrap to catch a spider.
Precisely. I often say we have a nitrogen pollution problem with a phosphorus solution. Like, this is, and I've been saying this for years, And I would say that there's, you know, a lot of farmers, a lot of advisors even, don't understand this. And it's absolutely critical. This is a really fundamental issue. Like, these pollutants move in totally different ways. Surely we should have totally different mitigation measures for addressing that.
And is the only mechanism by which we can achieve that to reduce herd sizes?
What we know from Chagas research and from research from New Zealand is the majority of that nitrogen on free-draining soils is coming from animals when they're out at pasture. It's our grass-based system that we often, you know, talk about. It's the cattle out on the land urinating. That's driving about 60% of the nitrogen being lost from dairy farms. No one is talking about that. So if you want to address that, you're going to have to tackle that. You're going to have to grapple with that really inconvenient fact, which nobody is doing to date.
If you, though, reduce the stocking density from broad brushstroke figures now, 3 animals a hectare to 2 animals or 1.5 animals a hectare, does it follow that you're necessarily going to get much better water?
Again, it depends. You know, we often think about land as being just this one uniform thing, but in Ireland we have huge diversity. The land is very diverse, how we farm is very diverse, so we need to go back to the science, because you could have 2 farms side by side doing exactly the same thing with exactly the same stocking density. One could be a major polluter, one could be completely fine. You won't know that by looking at them. You need to look at things like soil. How are the nutrients and how is the nitrogen moving through that soil?
One farm might be quite happily able to stock 3 animals a hectare, whereas there's another that just might not be suited to livestock farming at all.
Exactly. You really need to go back to the science. I mean, I'm a scientist, of course I'd say that, but you know, this is a really fundamental thing, because by applying a one-size-fits-all, it's failing farmers, because you'll have farmers putting measures in place that are ineffective or that they maybe don't need to, and it's also failing our water quality. So we're wasting farmers' goodwill, we're wasting their money that they're paying to put these measures in place. Like, why would we not ensure that the measures we're putting in place are actually effective? But so far, that's what we've been doing.
Are you sympathetic to where farmers find, particularly derogation farmers, find themselves?
I'm very sympathetic to them. I mean, they have, as I've said, they've invested in this. They have been advised by the government to expand, and they've been told that the measures they're putting in place are addressing water quality. I would say the state has been less than honest with farmers about how effective the measures are that they're putting in place to address water quality, and they've been less than honest with derogation farmers about what the situation is. I think the derogation, the farming model that's built on the derogation, it's built on sand. You know, every 4 years we have to go to Europe and with our begging cap out, asking for another derogation, and that's in the context of disimproving water quality, and we should only get the derogation if we have good water quality. Like, this was such a risky model, and I think that farmers were misled.
When he came home and said he was going to start there, and he asked me would I help him, I said I would, on one condition. And he said, what's the condition? You don't ask this kid to milk. And I didn't milk for the 2 years.
Before I left the Lenehan farm in Duleek, I was chatting to Joe as Owen was bringing silage to the cows. Suddenly, Owen jumped out of the tractor and ran over to me. He had one last thing to get off his chest. Ironically, it was exactly the same point that Elaine McGough has just made.
Everybody happy?
Yeah, I just want to say another thing. When I started college in 2015, the year quotas went, all we were taught was production. From the government were pushing this, Chagas, everyone was pushing production. And I feel like farmers were led down the path to push production, and they did, and they done well out of it, but now we're kind of been let down a little bit by the government because they don't have our backs. When we had their backs, we got them out of a big hole during the recession.
And was it their job to look at issues like nitrates and water quality and say, hang on a second, what are the consequences going to be of expanding the herd?
Yeah, sure, we know that them consequences were never looked at, but thought this is the system, it's the golden goose, it's a great job, and it turns out bad job. Like, it was never planned out or taught or anything. So farmers are taking the blame here, but we were led astray, and there's no one coming back to say, oh yeah, yous were led astray.
You want the government to stand up and say we were wrong?
But there's never anything said about, no, we were wrong on this or we were wrong on that. It's just, this is the way forward, and if something doesn't work out, they're never said, no, we're sorry, we told you that, we shouldn't have told you that.
Owen and Joe Lenehan in Duleek there. And this is the really difficult corner that we have backed ourselves into now. We can have very productive, economically viable farms, or we can have cleaner water. But with the approach that we're currently taking, it doesn't look like we can have both at the same time. So a decision on the future of the derogation is now imminent in Brussels, but it's still far from clear how that decision is being made. Pat O'Toole, political editor of the Farmers Journal, is better placed than most to explain what happens now. Good morning, Pat. What happens now?
Good morning. So what happens is on the 9th of December, the Nitrates Committee is going to meet in Brussels. It sits within DG Environment, not within DG Agri. So it's an environmental committee, a subcommittee of that part of the commission. But what this committee comprises of experts from each member state, from departmental experts, mostly from within environment departments. So they're going to consider Ireland's sixth draft Nitrates Action Programme, which is publicly available. It was released a couple of weeks ago. The public consultation continues up until the 1st of December, but that will govern all farmers and all actions, and it contains some changes for farmers. So that has to be approved, and the nitrates derogation will come up for discussion as part of that, because it's part of that overall package. And it's expected that a decision will be made by that committee, or a recommendation will be made by that committee, which will be endorsed then by the commission.
And Pat, are those people mostly scientists or mostly just civil servants?
Well, there's civil servants who are scientists mostly, okay. But there will be a range across the European departments. So Ted Massey will be there, I believe, for Ireland. Okay. And he was down in Johnstown Castle yesterday. I was there at the launch of an incentive package for studies to try and save Johnstown, or not to try and save the lake.
Ladies Island Lake. Okay,
lagoon.
So these guys make a decision which they will pass on to the commissioner, Jessica Roswell, who could change her mind. She doesn't have to be bound by what they say, does she?
Well, so it comes down to, I suppose, is this science or politics? It's both. Elaine McGough made the point that the science is incredibly complex. And at a meeting in Our Lady's Island last Monday that Elaine was the guest speaker at and I chaired, she highlighted that you could have two fields side by side farming in the same way to the same intensity with nitrates loading coming off of 2 kilos per hectare off one farm and 50 off the other. So, like, in a way, you could argue that the soil type is much more important relative in terms of what the stocking density should be, and that a patchwork approach may be the long-term future based on science. And the science is evolving very fast. We had a 13 million investment unleashed last week in Johnstown Castle for Chagosk, 44 new labs. Spaces looking at soil science, mainly soil science. So,
but back to the decision,
really,
Pat.
More and more about soil
back to the decision. Jessica Roswell will get a recommendation from this committee,
yes.
And then she will in turn pass on a recommendation to the Council of Ministers. But they can all go their own way, can't they?
Absolutely. We're dependent on the goodwill of the other nations. So that's the political side. But also, I think the arguments that were made in terms of Elaine highlighted that 220 may be enough when she was in with the Oireachtas Committee, Elaine McGough, last year, that we've already had a change from 250 kilos to 220 only 2 years ago. And the political argument is that we should allow that change to be understood better and the impact of that change to be understood better before we make another change. Also, the political argument and the economic argument is that farmers have to absorb that significant reduction in their maximum stocking rate over the last 2 years. To hit them with another cut now would be an economic blow
would
to
indeed
farms
be,
like the ones
be
we heard
cruel
this morning,
and
that
unusual.
They may not be able to. Yeah. So that the political arguments are in favour of a derogation. I think the mood music from the commissioner's visit was positive to another derogation. Two things, though.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there because
conditions attached.
I'm going to leave it there, Pat.
There will
because
be stringent conditions, and it may be the last one. That's it.
All right, Pat. Thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there because